broadcasting live from South Texas. This is your Petardcast. I am your host, Mr. Leonard Pierce, and tonight we shall do such things, what they are yet, I know not, but they shall be the terrors of the earth. For our second episode, we will be bringing you our very first guest star, Mr. R.J. White of Philadelphia in Pennsylvania, to play Jacques Hughes. I'll also be forcing him to read things that I wrote, but for which you should blame him if they aren't funny. In addition, I'll be bringing you more tidbits, celebrities are our betters, and other features that are so great that they resist entirely the process of being named. So please join me in oiling the squeaky wheel that is homebrewed internet comedy on tonight's Petardcast. First off, I'd like to return to Titbits, which was the column that I wrote for the New York Times in the late 1980s. Some of you have written to me to ask why you don't remember the Titbits column running in the New York Times up until 1989. I can't be held responsible for what you do and do not remember and why. I did have a falling out with the editor of the Times when the column was discontinued, and it's possible that he has purged all references to me from the New York Times archive. I suggest that you take it on faith the way that you do the existence of Jesus. Whenever somebody asks me what books I would take to a desert island, I always want to say I would take books about boat construction, because that way I could learn how to build a boat and get off the island, right? But then I worry that the person who asked might think I'm trying to pull something on them and would say, okay, mister, if you're so smart, why didn't you read books on how to build boats before going on the island? Plus, okay, sure, boat construction books would be great for when I need to get off the island, but what about the voyage back home? It could take weeks. Am I going to read boat construction manuals the whole time? Forget it. They're always so dry and technical. So instead I say those Sniglet books by Rich Hall. Those were pretty funny. If I could meet any historical person, I think I would pick Joan of Arc, because I bet she had great tits. I'm tired of wasting money on all these programs to try and prevent murder. Hey, Big Brother, people are going to murder each other anyway. You think somebody ever didn't chop up a drifter into a dozen pieces and bury the sections at different national parks just because some teacher told him it was wrong? We could be spending that money where it's really needed, like on candy. My mom was really overprotective of me when I was a kid. I can understand it because I was an only child and she couldn't bear the thought of anything happening to me, but it really ticked me off. It hindered my social development so that I couldn't do any of the normal childhood stuff because she was afraid I would get hurt. When the other kids were out skateboarding, I had to stay in and read because she was afraid I'd break my legs. When the other kids were playing football, I was at home learning to play the theremin because she was afraid one of the children would cut my helmet strap and permanently paralyze me. And when the other kids were having hammer fights, I was getting sent to the doctor to be inoculated against diseases that had either long since been eradicated or that my mother had just made up because she didn't want me to break my glasses. But the whole time, I kept lobbying her to let me play like a normal kid, and the thing I wanted most of all was my own bike. She was terrified that I'd get run over by a car or fall off and skin my knees or careen off the road into a drainage ditch and get raped by a hobo. But I argued and whined and cajoled until finally she let me get a bike. As it happened, on the way home from my very first solo bike ride, I broke my neck. But it was the result of a totally unrelated, racially motivated beating that had nothing to do with the bike. So, come on, Mom, unlock my door already. I'm 59 years old and I can't go anywhere in this iron lung anyway. I hear a lot about these low-carb diets like Atkins and South Beach Diet and the Hollywood Jew program. But do you know what would be a surefire diet plan? A weight loss pill that took off the pounds but came embedded in a bottle of whiskey. Or better yet, chocolate-covered whiskey. Wait, what was it again? All right, welcome back. Today, as we promised, our very first special guest, and it's a special guest indeed, joining me from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, Mr. R.J. White of the Wasted Words podcast, a show of which I'm quite fond, one of the inspirations for the Petardcast here.
Oh, jeez.
Welcome to the show, RJ. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Thank you for having me be the first guest.
Well,
I appreciate that. That's nice.
You know, your consistent availability is what I like about you.
That's about the only thing people can say about me. I'm usually available.
Well, please identify yourself. Tell me who you are and what you do.
My name is RJ White, as you said, from Philadelphia. Like what I do is in terms of like my job or just from day to day, just hanging around the house or something like that.
It's your choice.
My choice.
What do you want people to know about you?
I guess the Waste of Words thing is a big one. Wasteofwords.net. It's always good to plug things. Other than that, I work on a website and stuff like that for a business improvement district in downtown Philadelphia. And in my free time, I write things for websites that nobody reads. And yeah, I do the podcast. And that's pretty much it. Not
do
a lot else going on.
Explain the concept of Wasted Words for people who are too slow to figure it out.
Basically, it's a panel discussion show. And the main thing is everyone on it, it's best if they've had a couple of drinks before they're on and are drinking throughout it. And so everyone's just throwing their opinions out there. And it's a lot like hanging out with a bunch of drunk friends who don't know what the hell they're talking about for about 30 to 40 minutes. And that's the whole thing right there.
Very good. You live in Philadelphia.
Yes.
What is the deal with Philadelphia?
Oh, Christ, I don't know. I think my theory over the years has always been that it's a city that's always had a bunch of stuff taken away from it. Like, it was supposed to be the capital of the U.S. It was supposed to be the financial capital of the country.
Was the capital for a while, wasn't it?
Yeah, and then it got taken away by D.C. The financial stuff went to New York. And at some point, the whole place just shut down, and it became what I like to call a fucked up Brigadoon. They're just like, hey, we're not just ignored the rest of the world. The last stab they had at something like that was the 1950s. They were one weekend away from getting United Nations headquarters.
Wow, nice.
And then Rockefeller and Robert Moses stepped in and said, no, we got the land. So it went down there. And it's only been like the last, I'd say 15, 20 years or so, they've actually decided to rejoin society. And it doesn't always go very smoothly. It's a weird place. I've always thought of it as like it'd be a fictional place in some crime novel. You got this really dense city, old, between two rivers. You got the mafia still going crazy. You got corrupt city government. It always seems fake when something comes through in the news. You're like, no, that's – you made that up. Like, no, just that stuff really happens here. It's a
like,
weird place.
It's like Isola in the Ed McMahon novels. Except that was supposed to be New York.
Yeah, this would be better at that, I think.
Is there a rivalry between New York and Philadelphia?
I don't know. There's more of a chip on the shoulder between Philadelphia toward New York, I think.
Is New York aware of the rivalry between New York and Philadelphia?
No, I think New York is rather disdainful of Philadelphia. It's like, yeah, that's down there, whatever. I mean, the main selling point Philadelphia has had the last several years in terms of getting people to move here has been it's much cheaper than New York, which it is. You'd be able to get a house here, whereas New York you wouldn't have a chance in hell unless you buy like a one-room condo and pay, you know, like $800,000 for it. Whereas Philadelphia, you can get a place. You can actually live here comfortably, but it's still, for some reason, it kind of lends this whole thing of like the city just has this weird municipal a lack of self-esteem that it's never been able to get away from.
Chicago and New York doesn't help. The same way. And I remember.
It seems like Chicago has done better at finding its identity than Philadelphia has. Like, I mean, the Second City Theater, the reason that exists, the name, is because it referenced some article referred to Chicago as Second City.
Well, it used to be called the Second City because prior to the rise of Los Angeles, it was the second biggest city in America.
Oh, okay.
But once L.A. got really big, Chicago just kept trying to remind people that it was the third biggest city in America, but apparently the two biggest are the only ones anyone cares about. So Chicago has spent the last 50 years trying to convince America that it's a big city. And
yeah.
I remember when, you know, after 9/11 happened, Chicago kept having all these terrorist drills.
Just in case they'll go that far, any terrorist would be aware of
or even care about Chicago, you know. And I remember who's the guy, Ruben Bowling, who does the Tom the Dancer.
Oh, right,
comic.
Yeah.
He did a strip about Chicago, and he made the somewhat pointedly true observation that Chicago has a big rivalry with New York and L.A., whereas New York and L.A. have a big rivalry with each other.
Right.
You know, and
well, see, it's like, and the thing is, if you're going to consider your, if you're going to keep comparing yourself to New York, you're just going to go crazy. Because that thing, it's an entity unto itself. No one's going to compare with that. It's just this other huge thing by itself. And but to be constantly down here have that problem where it's just like, oh, well, it's not a world-class thing like New York. You're not going to – it's never. Just eke out some other sort of niche.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's very strange. But it's never going to go away either because New York is always sitting there. So, yeah.
You have initials for a first name.
Yes, I do.
Do you consider that a form of effrontery?
Toward whom?
Well, I don't know.
Toward society in general? Yes. Toward
Towards the American people.
Oh, I don't see why. The only thing I could vaguely think of as being like an effrontery is the fact that the initials don't really stand for anything. I don't have a J anywhere in my name. My real name is Roger Harrison White.
So where did the RJ come from?
My parents just, they picked those letters as some sort of nickname thing, and it just stuck for the last 35 years. And I've never really been able to pin down where it came from exactly.
So
I think
it's not like a retro gesture, like your choice of cocktails.
No, it's not. No, it's not. It's just that I think they picked it on a whim, and it just sort of stuck. And that's what I've had, really.
Fair enough.
And if anyone is offended by them, well, then I apologize for you feeling offended.
That's all I wanted was an apology.
Well, there you go. Right. Sorry, America. I'm sorry. My name is RJ, America.
All right. Well, we're gonna play a round of J'accuse.
Okay.
And in J'accuse, I'm going to talk about a historical atrocity.
Oh, wonderful. Okay.
And then I'm going to ask you to defend it.
All right, then.
Or just to, you know, we'll get to that. But
let's
introduce the subject first. We're going to talk about the Native American population decline.
Okay.
As you may be aware, before the arrival of what is colloquially called the white man to these shores, the Native American population numbered in the tens of millions.
Right.
Only to decline precipitately once colonization from Europe began, so that within barely a few hundred years, their population was below 5 million.
Mm-hmm.
There's an argument, a historical argument, as to whether this population decline should be considered a genocide, or whether it should just be considered the concatenation of a number of variant phenomena and of different intentionalities, which is why it's called the population decline instead of the genocide.
But right. Well, genocide, that's an unpleasant word.
Yeah.
Too.
But there is certainly no doubt that a great deal of the population decline, whether it's from, you know, murder and, you know, starvation and displacement, or from disease, is directly responsible. You know, the European settlers are directly responsible for that.
Okay.
So what I'd like to know, RJ White.
Yes.
What are you going to do about it?
Well, first, I want to clarify. Are we talking just North American, or are we both continents here?
You know what? I'm going to go as far as to let you off the hook.
Okay.
For South America, and I'll even give you Central America and the
West Indies. Good. All right.
But I'm going to hang...
Because a lot of the groundwork was laid there.
I'm going to hang the U.S. and Canada on you.
Okay.
That's still a lot of people. That's
it is. But it's not as much as if we were going all the way down to the tip of... Yeah.
That's true.
Okay. Okay. So what do I have to do here? I have to...
Well, I want to know what you're going to do about it.
What am I going to do about it?
First of all, let's establish that you are a white person.
That's true.
Your name is actually white.
Doesn't help. No, not at all.
And so far as I know, you know, I mean, I haven't known you your whole life or anything, but I have never known you to do anything to help the red man.
No, but, you know, to a little bit of fairness towards me and my family, my lineage, I do have some Native American ancestors, I believe.
Yeah, that's
from
what they all say.
The Michigan area, yes. My best friends, actually. Yeah, I don't. What am I going to do about it today? Well, I think raising awareness is a good thing to do. Raising awareness is very important. Perhaps by coming on this podcast.
You mean raising awareness of your culpability and
no,
the genocide.
No, no, no. Raising awareness of the problem, the issue. I don't think throwing around words like genocide helps. I mean, that just makes it very reactionary, I believe.
Does it make you feel bad?
Yes, that too. There's guilt there, and nobody really likes to feel guilty.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think.
Especially if, like you, you actually are guilty.
No, I've never done anything to specifically that I know of to cause a population decrease for the Native Americans.
Did you ever have smallpox?
No, I didn't. So see, I've never spread smallpox. I've never handed out blankets with smallpox to small children. I've never asked people to stay within a fenced area in the American West that I know of. But yeah, I think a lot of it, the whole disease thing, they didn't know the diseases were coming with them and that people would get sick. They were stupid. They didn't know about science back then. So I think that one gets thrown a lot, but that could have happened to anybody, anytime. I mean, it wasn't a specific thing like, oh, hey, we'll bring the small. It's not like now where we would specifically use smallpox to kill people on purpose. Back then, the smallpox was accidental. So I think a little bit, you let them off the hook a little bit for that.
Is your house on a Native American burial ground?
I'm trying to think. Being here in South Philadelphia, it's mostly just on a swamp that no one would have wanted anyway. So no, I don't believe it is on a burial ground.
Have you asked?
Besides, we haven't heard
ghosts.
Have
you asked any Indians if they would like your house?
No, I haven't done that.
So you don't know that they wouldn't want it.
That's true. Let me write that down.
I can look into it. See, I'm trying to help.
No, no, this is good.
It's not all about attacking people.
This is true. This is good.
I'm trying to come up with a program.
Ask some Indians if they'd like my house. I mean, it's an okay neighborhood. I don't see why they wouldn't. It's pretty nice, too.
Do you have any neighbors who are of Native American descent?
No, I believe they are all largely Italian-American folks.
All right.
Yeah.
So, on a scale of 1 to 100...
Okay.
In other words, expressed as a percentage...
Right, right.
How culpable do you feel that you personally are for the suffering and death of the Native American population of the United States and Canada?
See, it's tough, especially you throw Canada in too, because I've barely even been to Canada, and I think I've only spoken to Canadian people a couple times in my life. So that really cuts it down a lot there.
Have you ever had a Canadian guest on Wasted Words?
You know what? No, I haven't. We have lots of Canadian listeners. Oh, wait, yes, we have. Had Steve Murray, who was running for mayor of Toronto. He was on briefly a couple weeks ago. We supported him.
Have you ever had a Native American guest on Wasted Words?
See, I don't know, because you know what? I don't really see those things, Leonard. I don't ask for some sort of genealogical rundown before I ask them to be on the show based on their own merits. I don't really judge
it. What you're saying is that there are no Native Americans good enough to be on your show.
No, no, no. What I'm saying is I don't know because I am blind to such things.
No, well, that's very white of you.
Thank you. Well, see, there you go. Yes, exactly. But you know what? Then I would get slammed for that, I suppose. Yeah. Okay, percentage thing. I'm thinking. I was trying to think what anything would have given me some points, anything my family might have done helpful in the past. I think I had an aunt who perhaps worked at a orphanage or children's hospital or something, specifically for Native American kids up in northern Michigan long, long ago. So I think that gives me a few points there because I'm related to her directly. So I'm going to say I'll say 35%. 35%, that's just kind of large. I'm giving myself 35% that much. Because of, you know, being an American living here, we did some horrible things. Nobody, you know, turned a blind eye to stuff. And also, having grown up in Michigan, that entire state, pretty much, I mean, I don't think there's a huge Native American population there. And that was a very large place for those folks. And they were all just sort of pushed out and pushed aside over the years. So I'll say 35%.
Okay. So do you think it would be a fair gesture of compensation to personally increase the Native American population by 35%?
How could I personally increase that population myself?
You'd have to do a lot of fucking.
That's true. I'd have to ask my wife about that, Laura. I would definitely have to consult with her.
All right. Well, let's make that. Let's put that on your action.
I'll put that on the list after the house asking, possibly having sex with people to help increase the population.
All right.
Okay, that's good, because that's a lot of financial outlay there, which isn't bad. I mean, it's a little bit, it's some work, but it's not, you know, not a lot of work. Like having to go and actually go to somebody's house and work with them on something. Just kind of like, oh, hey, there you go, and then hopefully something pans out in the future. Yeah, okay. I could try that, I guess.
All right. Well, I think we've made some progress here.
Oh, I feel good. I feel much better. I feel less guilty about the genocide.
All right, good, good. I'm glad that we were able to do this, and thank you for participating in Jacques Hughes, the podcast feature that will solve all the world's problems.
Yeah, I'm glad to have helped.
All right, are you ready to do some dialogue?
I'm ready to do some dialogue. Evening, Smitty.
Hi, Race.
So what's a good word?
No good words in this town, Race. Only bad ones with four letters.
Ah, Christ, Smitty, lay off, will ya?
Hey, Race, I didn't mean no.
And can't you turn on a goddamn light in here? It's not even 5:30 in the evening, and it looks like a jail cell. It's a coffee shop, Smitty, not a dark room.
It's eating you, pal.
Ah, I'm sorry, Smitty. I didn't mean to snap at you. It's a little on edge, that's all.
Yeah, I heard about Layleen falling off the wagon again. You're probably worried she'll spill the beans about the Blaine ring, eh?
Well, it's partly that. I mean, it's exactly that, but it's just part of the whole picture.
I don't get you, Race.
I mean, this whole thing. Haven't you ever noticed that nobody's who they say they are anymore?
That's the way of the world, buddy.
But it didn't used to be like that.
Listen here, Mr. Rose-colored glasses. You've been around here long enough to know better. You're wise.
Oh, damn right I'm wise. Wise enough to know that statistically, we can't all be crooks. It's not economically feasible, let alone rational.
I don't follow you.
Do you know how I met Laleen Smitty?
She was that nurse who fixed you up after the gunfight with Chance's gang, right?
No, that was Rayette.
Was she the one who pulled that scam on Rotelli down at the pony track?
No, that was Kalita.
I give.
She's a Sunday school teacher.
What the hell would you want with a dame like that for, Race? It ain't like you.
That's exactly my point. Every skirt I've ever been with has turned out to be a cold-blooded killer, an ice queen, a rackets mall, or some psycho's last punching bag. When I went after Laleen, I deliberately picked out someone who'd be as pure as the snow before the hacks grubby up with exhaust.
But she ain't clean, Ray. She's mixed up in the dope. She's as dirty as they come.
I know! But how does a goddamn school teacher from Nebraska get mixed up in the dope rackets? She never even took an aspirin until she moved here.
This town is hard on a man. Woman double.
That's what I'm saying. How can every damn human being in this dump be on the make? Little kids down at the playground have switch knives in their sleds. I went in to have a crown put on. It turned out the dentist was deep in the Shanghai white slavery game. There were 6 dead on 3 continents by the time I finally got all my teeth cleaned.
It's a city, Race. It does things to you.
That's another thing, Smitty. I don't even know what this city is called, and I've lived here for 37 years. People always just call it the city or this town. I went down to the mayor's office last week to straighten it out once and for all. The name of this burg? You know what it says in the plate in the front of his office? It says Mayor. It doesn't even have his name. On the way out, I tried to look up the seal over the entrance to City Hall to see if the name of this town was written on it. It was so deep in shadows, I couldn't even make it out.
Well, maybe you gotta go in the daytime.
It was 10 a.m.
Hey, look, forget about it, okay, Race? You're tired. You've been working too hard on the Estelle case, and it can't have been easy on you when your partner turned up floating in a drainage culvert.
It wasn't my partner. It was my milkman.
But whatever. Let me get you a bottle of the good stuff on the house.
Oh. Gee, thanks, Smitty. That's real human of you.
Sure thing. Let me just go in the back and get it, and if the guy comes by with a beer delivery, could you sign for it?
Aye, no problem, Smitty.
Just, don't use my name. At least not my real name. Yours either, to be on the safe side.
Oh, Christ.
Hello. I'm Forzenworth of the Wise Council, and for the last 12 years, I've had the distinct pleasure and privilege of being the guidance counselor here at the Grey Malkin Preparatory School for the Gifted.
As you know, as a student here at GPS, you are among a unique few with talent, drive, and dedication to be numbered amongst the elite. But what you don't have is experience. You're all eager to get out into the world, to fight that dragon, to hoard that treasure, to unearth that soul-twisting artifact. I was young and eager once myself. But before you make a career decision that will stay with you the rest of your life, you've made an even smarter decision to come see me for a little advice. Now, I know I've got a reputation around here, aside from the those who can't do teach angle, and sure, you kids aren't impressed by a guidance counselor, even if he is 13th level. A lot of you look at me as some kind of a spoil sport. You think I'm gonna step on your hopes and dreams, or talk you out of doing what you really want to do with your lives. Well, nothing could be further than the truth. The fact is, my job is to put the right people in the right places for the career that's right for them. We'd all like to decapitate hydras, challenge demigods, and steal away with chthonic treasures of ancient demons. But then who would clean out the stables, pick up after the horses, amuse the king in between meals? There's no shame in a service profession, nor is there any shame in the noble work of a farmer, a blacksmith, or a hay baler. The only shame is in picking a career that doesn't suit your aptitudes. Let's take a look, not a despairing look, kids, not a talk-you-out-of-it look, but a realistic look at some of the careers you may be considering. Barbarian. Look, kids, I want you to have a realistic view of your future, but I don't want you to sell yourself short either. If you're at Grey Malkin Preparatory School, the life of a barbarian is not for you. Even those kids in shop class who used to throw inkwells at you before you transferred here, even those kids are too smart to be barbarians. What are you going to do, sit around the campfire eating raw bunny shanks while telling all the rest of the barbarians how you used to be really good at quadratic equations? Have a little faith in yourself. Leave this career to the inner city kids. Bard. I don't ever want it said that I discourage people from pursuing a career in the arts. Bardistry can be a very rewarding career if you hit it big, and it can be very personally satisfying as well, especially for you kids in the theater department who like to dress up like ladies and wear those froofy shirts. But I will warn you, no matter how good you are in high school, once you get out into the job market, one way or another, you will get rotten fruits and vegetables thrown at you. If you can handle that, then by all means, go for it. Cleric. This is a very fine, upstanding, respectable profession. The pay is not great, but the work is very steady. You'll have a high profile in your community. You get to wear snazzy outfits. In fact, for you kids in the theater department, this might be a safety for you if the bard thing doesn't work out. One caution. The clerical profession, as a rule, does not encourage a lot of the smart-mouthing I know you all like to do. Druid. A druid is a lot like a cleric, but with worse clothes and shabbier living conditions. You also have to perform a lot of emergency surgery on animals. All in all, if you're considering a career like this, I would just as soon point you in the direction of a good veterinary college. There's nothing a druid doesn't do that a good vet doesn't also do and make more money at it in the bargain. Fighter. There's no doubt that this is a good solid profession. It can pay well. It's always in demand. All my years as a guidance counselor, I've never seen an abatement in the need for professional killers of every stripe. Of course, the fact that they always need more of them should tell you something. Also, and let me be perfectly honest with you kids, this is not really a profession that a lot of you are going to qualify for. This one is more for the kids on the football team at your old school who used to knock the books out of your hands. Monk. Every year I get a bunch of kids coming and telling me they want to be a monk. Can I level with you? If you want to jump around and kick things with your feet, join the circus, because it pays better than being a monk. Monks have to take a vow of poverty. I wouldn't be called Forzenworth the Wise Counsel if I was counseling people to take jobs where their net annual income would even out to zero the first year. I wish they wouldn't have these guys at the pep rallies, because it just gives you kids the wrong idea. Paladin. This seems like a very appealing occupation to a lot of my students, and there's no denying that it has a lot of appeal. It's a high-class occupation. I mean, there's nothing like going to law school, but it's right up there. community respect, a good income, a high public profile, total immunity to disease. There's a lot to recommend Paladinry. I just need to warn you, this is not a fast-track job for slackers. You are going to put in a lot of hours, and you can forget about dating or anything like that. If any of my kids become paladins, I am busting with pride for them. But between you and me, a lot of the kids who choose this option are kind of Melvins. Rogue, legally I am barred from giving you any information about this career. Sorcerer. Okay, sorcerer. It's like being a wizard, but less nerdy. Kids, let me tell you something. Do you know what the world needs? The world needs engineers. The world needs coal miners. The world needs livery attendants. The world even needs scullery maids. What the world doesn't need is some low-life yutz screwing around making colored lights and muttering about the power of the blood. Back in my day, we had a different name for this occupation. We called them village idiots, and they made a decent, if unglamorous, living. Forget this racket and become a bookkeeper or a stable hand or something useful. Wizard. This is an ideal profession for most of you kids. You're smart, you're studious, you're physically weak and timid, and you're easily distracted. You also like memorizing the same things over and over again. I myself went to wizard school for a while until I found out they weren't kidding about the hats. Frankly, I think compiling actuarial tables is a more practical application of your particular skill sets, but let it never be said that Forzenworth the Wise Counsel ever stood in the way of a boy in his dreams. It's time once again for an installment of Celebrities Are Abettors, and let me tell you people something. I had some complaints last week that this is a frivolous portion of the show and that I'm kind of wasting everybody's time with it. That is the kind of thing that somebody who doesn't believe that celebrities are abettors would say. I don't know what to tell you. You know, when I go to these sites to look up the celebrity news, it takes them like 15 minutes to load on my computer because there's so many ads and there's so many people trying to access those same pages. You know what that means? That doesn't mean that they can't afford good servers. It means the people want to know about this stuff. That means it's important. So, you know, I guess go back to your NPRs or your Guardians or your, you know, Socialist World Weekly or whatever you people read, because celebrities are more important than us, and that's why it's good to know about them. For the rest of you who have your priorities straight, here's this week's installment of Celebrities Are Our Betters. It's from People, Friday, October 22nd. Katy Perry and Russell Brand spoil their wedding guests. Katy Perry and Russell Brand's wedding won't take place until this weekend. That means that by the time you people are listening to this, it's already happened. Isn't that wonderful? But the festivities have already begun. A couple who are staying at a resort near the Ranthambore Wildlife Sanctuary in India have been keeping their guests busy with song and dance performances, not by them, shopping, and even an early morning safari. Though the area is known for its tiger population, according to one wildlife guard, the group that went out early Thursday morning, which did not include the singer, Katy Perry, 25, or the actor, Russell Brand, 35, saw baby deer, spotted deer, blue bulls, jackals, and jungle cats. Still, the source says, they were thrilled. Brandon Perry joined in the wildlife fun Friday by going on safari. Thursday, a small bazaar was set up inside the resort, an Indian wedding tradition. That would be setting up a bazaar, not having the wedding take place in a resort, where guests could buy textiles, jewelry, and Indian handicrafts, or have their fortune told by a parrot. He picks a card based on the Indian cosmic system. Later, under a full moon, the wedding party was entertained by 40 folk musicians and dancers. Everyone was relaxing by the pool and drinking and eating Indian snacks while we performed, said Lalit Tiwari, who had brought the troupe into Ranthambore from New Delhi. Towards the end, some of them came towards the stage and started dancing during the Bhangra, an energetic dance from the rural area of Punjab. Friday night's plan, a Bollywood-themed performance, along with a traditional Mehndi ceremony, one of the most important pre-wedding rituals of an Indian marriage. There's Katy Perry and Russell Brand are not Indian, but the important thing is they're helping out the local economy. From OK Magazine, my favorite source for celebrity news. This is an OK exclusive from Friday, October 22nd. That means you're not going to find that anywhere but OK Magazine or here where I'm reading it, probably in violation of many laws. Because you don't want intellectual content this labored over to just get out there where anybody can claim credit for it. Adriana Lima, quote, "I love push-up bras." On October 20th, at the Victoria's Secret store in Soho, Adriana Lima debuted the $2 million fantasy bombshell bra for NYC. It's $2 million bra. Let me take out the title of it there so you get the... So you know, I'm not bearing the lead. $2 million bra. About the bra, Adriana told OK, "It's really great. It was designed by Damiani, and it's all white diamonds, light blue sapphire, a little blue topaz, set in 18-carat white gold, 142 carats. And it goes on your tits. That's what you do with it. It's amazing. All embroidered in the Miraculous Bra, which right now is my favorite." I think that's a brand name, Miraculous Bra, but it's not capitalized. "I love push-up bras. For maximum cleavage, this is the best bra for that, and it's really comfortable. It's made out of diamonds, but it's very comfortable. Really comfortable." She also told OK how excited she is to walk in the upcoming Victoria's Secret show. Excited to walk. "I can't wait. It's the biggest event of the year, and it's the biggest event to me personally. I love it, and I'm always excited to see who's going to be singing every year. We just announced that Akon and Katy Perry are going to be in the show." See, when Katy Perry gets back from her traditional Indian wedding, she'll have something to do. "I can't wait." She can't wait. "As the mother of an almost one-year-old girl, what is Adriana's advice to new mothers? It's about quality time. Not how much time you spend with the baby, but quality. It's quality time. Because you can't spend all your time with her. You have to go and get your picture taken wearing a $2 million bra sometimes. But as long as it's quality time, that's what counts. Our final item, this is from E! Online, Saturday, October 23rd. "Mystery of Hillary Duff's missing wedding day tooth solved." Well, she certainly had something new, as the wedding custom goes. Hillary Duff, who had lost a tooth on the morning of her wedding, is finally revealing how it happened. And no, she didn't get body checked by her pro hockey playing hubby, Mike Comrie. So don't worry about that. It was not domestic abuse. So how did it happen? The 23-year-old bride, who tied the knot in August, was a guest on the Ellen DeGeneres show, where she fingered a baked good as the culprit. That sentence has so many problems. First of all, so how did it happen? The 23-year-old bride, who tied the knot in August, was a guest on the Ellen DeGeneres show. Oh, so she got her tooth knocked out by Ellen DeGeneres. No. Comma, where she fingered a baked good. Why did she do that? No, there's more. As the culprit, exclamation point. It's good writing. "I bit into a bagel. I was sitting on the bed with my mom and my sister, and they're like, 'You're an idiot, you did not.'" There's no comma there. I'm going to read that again. "I bit into a bagel. I was sitting on the bed with my mom and my sister, and they're like, 'You're an idiot, you did not.'" "Come on," recounted Hillary. Come on, recounted Hillary. I burst into tears. Her mother just called her an idiot. Or an idiot you did not. I then started laughing at myself, and then I really burst into tears. Okay. So she was kidding about the having previously burst into tears. She really burst into tears after laughing at herself. This is random. You know something good's coming after that phrase. My amazing wedding planner, Mindy Weiss, Mindy's sister's husband's best friend, you get all that? Is a top dentist in Montecito, and she called him up. Duff and Comrie, who as an NHL star knows her missing teeth, were married in Santa Barbara in front of 100 guests. She said she also abided by the tradition of wearing something old, something new, something borrowed, and something blue. We're sure she's grateful her rush job tooth wasn't borrowed. Or blue. This has been Celebrities Are Our Betters. And girl, you know it's true. Well, that's it for tonight's edition of the Petardcast. Thank you to Mr. R.J. White of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, for joining us. He can be reached at wastedwords.net, a show I highly advise you to listen to. His Tumblr account is icecreammotor.tumblr.com. Join us next week for more forensic exhumation of the battered corpse of comedy, as well as naming of parts, Celebrities Are Our Betters, and another special guest so special, you will soil yourself. As always, if you're interested in appearing on the show, email me at guests@ludiclive.com. Remember, you can subscribe to the Petardcast free of charge on iTunes or listen anytime at ludiclive.com. We're always happy to hear from you at info@ludiclive.com. This episode is dedicated to Gerard Gales and Meryl Marco. Thanks to the Bombay Spirits Company Limited and Purdue Pharma for their help in preparing the podcast. I am your host, Mr. Leonard Pierce, and when the music fades out, you will wake up feeling refreshed.